You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy!
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for July 18th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter. We suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we'd like to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. And we're also streaming live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there as well, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by recapping last week's weekly tittle, which was called Shake It Up. The assignment was to disrupt the status quo for a space in your home. We'd love to hear from our participants live in Zoom and on Facebook. Who shook up a fossilized space this week? Please let us know in the comments.
I love the fossilized space description. That is, it's been there so long, it's turned into a fossil. I love that.
Do you encounter this much in client spaces? Do you have any interesting stories about disrupting a client's status quo?
I do, actually. This one involves a rodent as well. So,
oh my.
So I had a client who, the daughter who lives out of state called me, and the mother lives in an assisted living facility. And the apartment, it's just a one little efficiency room apartment, was so packed full that the daughter was unwilling to go into the room. Like, she would come to visit her mother, but they would sit outside the room because it was too crowded and crazy in there for her. And there was also an odd odor that I couldn't ever explain. And so the daughter called me and hired me to come and help. And of course, the mother, the resident in the home is in the apartment, was older. She had really lost some capacity. Her eyes were failing. She didn't have the physical strength to do the work for very long before she'd have to sit down. And so it was really about recognizing that the mom didn't have the capacity anymore. It was more than she could handle to clean it up herself. It was just too much for her. And keeping up with the laundry was hard for her. Trying to get down the hall to the laundry room and back again was a struggle. And so there was all kinds of things about the apartment that were a result of the mother's diminishing physical capacities. And so I came in and we started making our way around the apartment. And I ultimately, after many visits, cleared out, got it all cycled through, cleaned up. And at some point, I started seeing when something gets really dense and full, then you can't see everything behind it. And I ended up finding a place that there was some rat poop, little rat pellets sitting there somewhere.
Ooh.
Like, oh, that means there's actually a rat in the apartment somewhere. So I said that to the daughter, and we kept cleaning up. And of course, thank you, Jesus, I never interacted with the rat. It was not a problem. But they did come and put some baits down, and eventually the rat was killed and disappeared. And surprisingly, after I had, you know, vacuumed up and found and disposed of all the rat poop and the rat was gone, the funny odor went away. So, and the end result of all of that was that the daughter was able to come and be in the apartment with the mother. And that was a big win for both of them, that she was not so horrified that she couldn't go in the apartment and be with her mother. And that to me was a huge sea change in how their relationship was going, because it didn't make the mom feel guilty anymore. And the daughter felt like she could come and be supportive and loving towards her mother. And so it was a big deal to make that change and to, you know, basically cookie toss the entire contents of that apartment until most of it was gone, except what she really needed, and you know, clean it out. And it was a big change for her.
Let me share some comments from our participants live.
Okay.
Naomi says, I helped a friend sort out part of her linen closet this week. We half filled a big black garbage bag with the ragged old face cloths and hand towels she didn't need anymore. Then I took them home and put them on my shelves to replace the even more ragged face cloths and towels that I was still using.
Did you take out your more ragged ones? That's the question. Did you still remove some?
Well, she did say to replace.
Oh, yes, I did.
She
okay.
Did say replace. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Very good. Excellent.
You know what they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Exactly.
Paula says, my fossilized space was my purse, dumped everything out and gave the purse a good cleaning.
Oh, I bet that feels better. And how great to reach into it and be able to find everything now again. Good job. That's a good one.
And Tammy is chalking up a success with my space was the 12 spirals I discarded last week during the session with support.
Yes, that was awesome. That was very, very good. It's true. Another one that I did, another client one that I did was an older couple had moved into a different house, and everything that didn't fit in the house sort of got stuffed into the garage. And so again, the couple's daughter hired me to come and dig out the garage with them. And I did go do that one day. And they had supplied some helper bees as well. And we were able to pull everything out, move some things into the house that were supposed to be there, throw out a huge amount of trash, and then rearrange the garage so that the dad could use the garage for his tinkering and his, you know, projects and stuff. And when we got to the end of that day, it was a big sea change for him, because he felt like he could go into the garage and do stuff. And that made a big difference to dig out the pile, rearrange it, and make it functional for somebody. It makes a big difference when you can finally do that.
Rejoice says, my tittle was digital. I cleared out old files that were so old, I don't remember why I kept them.
Yay. I'm sure that was a good one.
That's a specific chore that we could assign as a tittle to probably everyone who's certainly everyone who's participating live
right
on some kind of a device that probably has stuff you saved that you don't even remember why. Right.
What was the point of that? Exactly.
Mavis says, I crossed the 100 items departed this month line last week.
Pretty happy with that. That's awesome. Yay. So you were aiming to get to 100 in a month and you got to it already. That's awesome. Congratulations.
And it's only the 18th.
It's only the 18th. Good job. Clearly the goal was too small for you.
Time to raise the bar.
I know, because you are a samurai declutterer now.
You've got more than enough time to go for 150.
Right? Good job.
Teresa says, I flipped the mattresses in two bedrooms, took clutter out, vacuumed, and put on fresh, pretty sheets.
Hey, that's a big shuffle. That's good. I mean, and you know, when you flip the mattresses and make the sheets up again, you've got a brand new bed, right? It feels real different after that. So good job.
Okay. I think we should probably get on with our main topic.
All right.
Children, spouses, parents, roommates, housemates, and even unruly house guests or siblings, as we talked about last week, can muddle or add complexity to our organizing challenges. Today, we're going to explore these complicating factors and suggest ways to improve communication, negotiation, and cooperation to decrease household conflict and clutter.
We talked about this topic recently about the relationships in around clutter, but we've got so much interaction and feedback about it. We can tell that it's a big pain point for people. So that's why we're circling back about it so quickly. Generally, nobody who lives together plans to have a discussion about clutter and clutter management with their housemates. These conversations usually start when someone's already frustrated and angry about a messed up space, and they start out by yelling or complaining, and the other person gets defensive right away. After that, it's no surprise that it becomes an argument instead of a constructive discussion, with little success in generating any changes in behavior. We got some fabulous answers to our survey questions about this topic, so we're letting your answers drive the conversation today. Your real life situations will let us discuss what it's like to negotiate with those that you share your space and where the negotiation breaks down. And I'll do my best to give you some suggestions about improving the interactions.
First question we asked was, which household member or members support your decluttering or organizing efforts and how? Selena said, my sister asks me if I really need another of those amazing cardboard boxes, or can she just trash them? I love her.
It's so great that even though Selena's sister obviously thinks the boxes should be trashed, she still asks permission to do so. That is her having a level of respect for her sister. And then she uses a little humor and a little sarcasm to insert a bit of a reality check about the boxes to Selena. And her sister's really being respectful and also amusing about the situation and truthful about her own opinion. I think it gives Selena good support about letting the boxes be recycled instead of adding to what's probably an already existing collection of boxes. I'm just going to guess. The tricky part is to acquiesce if Selena decides that she needs to keep something without shaming her or getting angry. True support can take that last step as well. And that is my biggest support as an organizer for a client, is if somebody says they want to keep it, that we keep it and I move on. If I've given my, you know, suggestions about it and it still needs to stay, then I just accept and move on to the next thing, because there's going to be something else that's ready to go out of the house if it's not that one. So good job on your Selena. Good job on your sister. She's being supportive and that's awesome.
Well, I really think that humor, that sort of sarcastic humor is really kind of a reflection of the honesty of the communication.
Yeah.
You know, to when you can laugh about it, you're in a good place.
Right. And the sister is, you know, is being honest about how she feels about it. Like, she very clearly with her sarcasm is saying, yeah, you need to throw these away. But she's doing it in a way that is a little more funny instead of directive or pokey. Like, she's not saying you have to, or we need to, or this is, you know, she's being much more indirect and amusing about it, which allows Selena to go along for the ride, to get on board about it without feeling attacked or defensive.
Okay. The next answer came from Anita, who said, husband has been sorting, thinning, and making notes for distribution of his many collectibles. Good for him.
Yay.
Kids have been prompt in answering my email or text questions about, do any of you want this thingamajig?
So, I love that the husband is already doing his part on his collectibles, because, of course, who else is going to be,
right.
Who else is going to have the best understanding of the collectibles than him? And so it's great that he's being a part of the team and that he's working on sorting and thinning it himself. So that's awesome. And it's also the fact that the kids are answering the emails and text messages, so helpful, because I do this all the time with clients where they say, I wonder if my sibling needs this. I wonder if my daughter would want that, blah, blah, blah. And I always say, send them a message right now. Send them a text this minute. And 9 times out of 10, we'll get an immediate response, which is awesome, because then whatever is that moment of hesitation where you think, does this person want it, stalls you in your forward progress and stops you from making a choice. And if you don't then ask them the question, you just have this unclosed loop in your mind about, does this person in the family want that thing? And so then you can't make any movement. And if you do send them the message and ask them and you don't get a response, you're stuck in the same place. And now I can't do anything about it because I can't get an answer. And I'm mad that I haven't gotten an answer. So right. Now you've compounded it by, being ignored when you're reaching out to get an answer. And so the kids are participating by promptly responding. And most of the time, I'm going to bet most of the time they're saying, no, I don't want that. Forget
right.
it.
Right.
Which gives her, it assuages her guilt about making the decision alone, that they, the kids have now given her permission and then she can let some stuff go. And so that really helps. I mean, it's a small thing for the kids to do, but if they just answer the questions, then that allows the mom to let go of her motherly guilt around getting rid of things. And, it's like, I checked with them. They said it was okay. I can let it go. And that is a huge benefit to the mom. So good on you, good on your husband and your kids for participating, Anita. It's really wonderful. Tell them I said, thanks for supporting you.
Oh yeah. Mavis has a comment that's relevant to this particular survey question. So she says, my colleague has unwittingly supported me by falling in love with two scarves I wore to work this week. I decided to get rid of them, so it was easy to transfer ownership right there.
Oh, look at you handing things off. Awesome.
We have various things in our house that if somebody came in and said, ooh, I really like that, we would just be like, oh, here, take it. I'm taking it off the wall. Right, it's all yours. We only have it because we've had it for a while. More answers to this question. Elle said, my mother keeps the kitchen organized and does her part in putting away things in the rest of the home, which is organized per my design.
That is so great. I mean, great that you've divided the labor up between your mother and you, and she's participating. And whether you negotiated that agreement or if it just worked out that way, that like, this is the place where your mother likes to work. She likes to keep the kitchen clean and she's doing her part in the rest of the house. I'm glad that you divided it up and it works for everybody. I hate cleaning the kitchen, so having somebody else clean the kitchen would be awesome. And good job that you guys are doing that as a team.
Christine's answer was, talking my decluttering progress through with my sister on the phone helps tremendously.
It's so great to have a support system around this, right? Like whenever you need something and you need to have a conversation about something, anybody that's willing to talk to you about it and help you and sort of be the outside objective point of view and giving you some constructive feedback or just getting you out of your head about it because you're having a conversation out loud with somebody makes a difference in how you see it. And it's really wonderful that she's willing to talk to you about it and back you up in that way. I'm sure it's super helpful. And for somebody that likes to talk like me, having the conversation alone in my head is not a very good solution.
Not so whatever, satisfying.
Right? Whatever the problem is, I do much better if I'm talking out loud with somebody. And even if they're just, listening, sometimes I've talked myself into a solution because somehow talking means that I come up with different and better thoughts than when I just have the thoughts in my head. That's not the truth for introverted people. I think that they do better having those conversations in their head. But still, being able to call somebody and talk about a sticking point, a place where you're hung up, a place where you're having trouble devising a system, coming up with a plan, getting okay with letting go of something, all of that conversation shared by two in discussion between you, I think can only be helpful. And that's great that you have somebody to do that with.
One of our themes in survey responses, there were two dominant themes in survey responses. One was Husbands are often not helpful. And two was sisters are often very helpful. Ginger says, this week I got help from my sister to help push through a pile of paperwork involved in settling my parents' estates.
Oh, that's
huge,
good.
Huge stress reliever.
Right, right, right. And, you know, and it's an estate, right? Your parents' estate. And so having your sister participate and support you in making the decisions about what paper to get rid of and stuff, that's awesome. Good job.
Jane in California says, my neighbor often tells me that I need to get rid of everything on the sides of my garage. She has stuff on both sides of her garage, but it's in closed cabinets. I'm guessing the fact most of my stuff is in stacked boxes is what bothers her. Lots and lots has been decluttered in my garage. I need to find a way to have her acknowledge lots is gone to be motivated to keep going. A little positive feedback would be more motivating.
It's true. And you may not be able to, she may not be able to provide that. So you may have to rely on someone else to acknowledge that you're doing a good job. If the, you know, if the neighbor clearly is hung up on the visual,
right?
That they don't like the look of the stuff that's out. And so that's bothering them and getting under their skin. And they keep harping on the point that is irritating to them, which is of course not motivating. So I would, you know, do your best not to talk to that person about it and then reach out for the support that you need to keep going to somebody else who can acknowledge that you've done some work and you've made some changes. And I will say to you here, I'm sure you've done some work and made some changes and gotten rid of some stuff. And the house, the garage is big and it takes a lot of hours and manpower to clear it out. And so you might see if, as you're working in the garage and working on the things on the side of the garage, if you can make some space and bring some of those boxes into the garage to work on them from there so that you concentrate on stuff that's irritating the neighbor and get them out of your face. It might be that just working on things on the side of the garage, make them a priority so that the conflict with the neighbor about it is going to remain until you're able to complete it. And it's going to continue to be a negative motivation. It's going to continue to be a bother to you and a stressor to you. Because of the way that the neighbor is interacting with you about it. And so I would be supportive of yourself in spending the time that you can working on the things on the side of the house that she can see, working on those things first, making them a priority so that either you can get them into the garage out of her face for you to deal with at your own pace, or there's some of them that you can deal with and get out of there now, you know, focus on that stuff first so that you don't have to have this argument. You don't have to have this, you know, negative conflict with your neighbor anymore. Cause yeah, I can totally see why if she's a, you know, poking on you all the time about it, that is definitely a negative incentive.
And well, and one other option is shake it off, answer her, have a, prepare a stock answer for her, like thank you for your feedback, and leave it at that, and then ask for acknowledgement from people who do support you,
who do know what you've been doing and who are able to say, yes, I know you've thrown out, you know, 27 garbage bags, or you've made donations three times this week, or you know, anybody that can you can report to and then get support and kudos from to back you up on the work that you're already doing.
I jumped the gun a little bit with that comment, because that would have been more appropriate with the next question, which we'll get to in a moment. But one more on the topic of helpers. Lisa Beth says, I have an accountability partner and a great friend who has shared office space with me in the past for years. I wasn't sure. It's for years, not 4 years. I was going to read it the wrong way. Okay, let's get on to the next answers to the next question.
Okay.
Which was, which members of your household frustrate, foil, interrupt, or otherwise complicate your decluttering or organizing efforts, and how? An anonymous respondent said, my adult daughter uses my study as her laundry area, and it is completely full of her clothes. She also uses the dining room as a staging area to pack and unpack for camping trips, and it stays full as well. I don't push her because I have my own messes, and I would feel hypocritical unless I pick up my stuff first. Plus, she has lots of stress right now because she is pushing forward on other things in her life.
So I can see that this mom is wanting to support her daughter, remarking about the daughter's stress level. And she also doesn't want to be hypocritical, complaining about the daughter's messes when she has some of her own. My question is about the use of the house. If the study's not usable as a study and the dining room is not usable as a dining room, then your daughter has really changed the purposes of these rooms to suit her needs. And I'm wondering if that's okay with the mom to give up the function of those spaces. If she doesn't need a study or dining room for their obvious functions of studying and dining, then mom can surrender these rooms to the daughter and not worry about it. But if the mom needs a home office, a place to study or work to pay bills, then I think we have to negotiate on this a little bit. Parents are always willing to sacrifice for their kids, but I would want to make sure that the parent could do what they need to do in their own home. So I would think camping doesn't happen all the time. So helping the right. daughter clean up and put away all the camping stuff after a trip would be a good compromise, maybe. So the dining room can be reclaimed and used as a dining room most of the time. I hear the mom simultaneously having an issue with the clutter and just letting the daughter get away with it. Like she's bothered about it and she's making the list of reasons why it is the way that it is. Like she's, yeah. So I can hear the conflict for the mom.
I understand not wanting to feel like a hypocrite, but then that you could also turn that into an opening for a conversation about it and say, look, I know I do this, that, and the other, and I could really use your help and support in improving my habits. And while we're talking about this,
right?
You know, come to a negotiation with the concessions you're prepared to make, or the promises you're going to offer, the changes you're going to suggest for yourself. And it's not unreasonable to ask for what you need from her.
There's nothing wrong with wanting an improvement, even though you're not at 100% perfection. Like none of us are 100% perfect. None of us are doing everything all the time that we're supposed to be doing, that it all looks perfect and fine. We have perfect habits and we do everything without fail. Like that's just not real for everybody or for anybody. It's not normal. And so waiting for you to be perfect before you feel like you can ask for support in these two areas, in these two rooms, it's not realistic. And it's not honoring the fact that you live in the house too. Yeah. So I would have a discussion about it separate from cleaning and being frustrated, and maybe strike, you can't get both of the rooms to a space that is absolutely how you want it. But maybe you can come up with a compromise level of, you know, when you're going to do the camping stuff, when you're done with the camp, like when you come back with the camping and the camping's done, I'll help you go through and put things away. And then we can put the camping stuff up until the next camping trip. And maybe that allows you to be supportive of her and still make some change in a room that will make you feel better and make you feel like you're reclaiming one of your spaces. I don't know what to say about the laundry other than she's backed up by her laundry and maybe doesn't have like part of the issue may be, and you can ask this in conversation, part of the issue may be farther down the chain, like she can't get into the closet or there's no room for the closet. And so, I mean, there's no more room in the closet for more clothes. And so when she's doing the laundry and gets to, you know, the place of putting things up, she can't go put it away. So there may be some, the reason it's backed up into that one room is because there's some breakdown in the system somewhere else. Having a conversation about that, maybe supporting her in doing the laundry and staying ahead of it. It's your space and you want to be better. And she's stressed and has a lot to do. And so part of the conversation may be what you're willing to do to support her functions there so that you like the end result and she is able to still do what she needs to do. Again, it's, you know, it's a point of negotiation for you guys to have that conversation separately. What would work, what would help the daughter, and what would honor your request that the rooms look better, be better, you know, function like they're supposed to.
Anita answered this question. Husband sees no rush in making decisions about stuff. This lowers my energy or raises my frustration.
Yeah. So it made me wonder if he's just reflecting that he finds the chore overwhelming and it's just putting off making a decision to straight up avoid doing the work. Can you make decisions about some of the stuff for him? Is it his stuff in theory that needs to be make decisions about, or are you just wanting him to participate in the process and he just doesn't have, his timeline doesn't look like yours?
The time sense thing struck me about this one. People differ in their sense of time and the importance of things. And my dad suffers from what we call bee in bonnet syndrome. And so
please elaborate on bee in bonnet syndrome. Well,
if you have a bee in your bonnet, it means there's something you cannot ignore. Mm. And so when he thinks about a project that he wants to complete, it just
becomes on it.
An obsession. And so, you know, the husband is I'm thinking the respondent, Anita, is the one with the bee in her bonnet, and he's responding to her on his casual, relaxed timeline and doesn't realize how important it is. So, you know, one suggestion is tell him how important this is to you. Give him a deadline and say, I really would like your answer because I can't do these other things until I finish this thing. So can you work with me here?
Right. Like that's going to wear out very quickly if your response is, I need your answer by this deadline. And you keep saying that over and over again as you work your way around the house. And so I would do that for things that are very, are key priorities in your movement of the stuff and things that around which you can't work. If this decision about this chair is the one that pivots all the other decisions after that, then that's a conversation to go and have with him about it. Lining up those questions in order of necessity and maybe isolating some of the stuff, like maybe if there's decisions that he needs to be making about some of the stuff, maybe you just isolate that stuff in a specific area of these are the questions I have for you, and you put them all in one room, go walk them in front of him one at a time, you know, get his attention for 10 minutes twice a day and work through stuff in small batches. If you just bring your husband to the project you're working on, say, I need decisions about all this stuff right now, then it's going to be a problem. But doling it out in little pieces is probably better.
Yeah. Amanda's response to the survey question was, my partner, it's just the two of us for now, likes to sell things rather than donate. Not a terrible thing to do, but not fast or easy.
No, it does. It exponentially slows down the process, right? And so I think the way that you get around that is you make some parameters about the things that need to be sold. It's not worth the time and energy that it takes to sell it unless it's worth more than, you know, pick a number.
$25,
$50. $25, whatever, $100, yeah. Whatever.
Whatever your magic number is.
Yes. It's like, it's not worth it for you to spend 6 hours to sell something that is going to be sold for $4. And so you kind of negotiate, okay, you can sell things if it is above this, if you're going to offer it for sale above this threshold. And if it's not going to be sold for that, then I need to donate it instead because I don't want all this stuff backed up while you get around to selling things later. So it does acknowledge the time-laden nature of selling stuff, the labor intensity of it. And it takes a long time, and it takes a lot of, you know, computer time and a lot of interaction time, and then deliver, you know, packaging and delivery time too. So setting that parameter to the threshold of, if it's below this dollar amount, it's not worth our time to sell it, and I just need to donate and get it out, will at least make the pile of things to be sold a much more concentrated one. Yeah. And less cluttery while the partner works his way through it.
Well, in a calm conversation about this, you can dig into, how much do you enjoy selling stuff? If you just love it, if your partner just loves doing that, really has fun doing it, and can keep up with the load, that's fine. But you might find out that, well, they don't really enjoy it that much. They just have some of those emotional responses.
Yeah, they just feel like they should make money from it.
I spent money on this, so I need to recover money from this. And
yeah.
We can encourage you to talk to them about the sunk cost fallacy.
Right. Well, and to acknowledge that if it's not a chore that you like to do, then you're not inclined to do it very frequently, which means that we're never going to get any of this stuff out of the house, and it's going to be backed up a lot. And so if it really is that they just feel bad about letting go of things of value, then you have a conversation about, your time is worth more than you can possibly make from this item. And we can send that value in support of somebody else. Somebody else down the line can get access to this and use it. And isn't that a better use of your time for us to get it out of the house and let someone else use it than for you to make money off of it when you find that process annoying? And so it is a good point that Ed's making about, find out whether they think that's fun or whether they just feel like they're supposed to be selling it. Yeah. Because that's the right thing to do. And then have a conversation about the value of their time and whether it should be spent on that, and how the labor intensity combined with not liking to do it means that it's not going to get done very often, and it's going to back up. The stuff is going to back up in the house. And so that's a good conversation to have separately, for sure.
Yeah, in a pinch, you can say, I'll give you $75 if you'll let me take this van load of stuff to Goodwill.
I'll pay you to get over it. I like it. That's funny.
one more answer on the question of who foils, frustrates, or complicates your efforts. Tammy says, I do this myself. Put it in the giveaway bag and take it back later. And Creative Planet Janet chimed in on that one. She said, I live alone, but seem to have problems negotiating, fighting, ignoring, etc. with myself.
And you know, the claim back thing is a problem, right? Part of how you solve that is that you decide things that need to go for donation today, and then you let them rest overnight, and then you take them out, you run the errand the next day and get them out of the house. Because if you're putting them in and taking them back, you're kind of negating the work that you did, right? Like you're unwinding the time that you spent.
Yeah, doubling your time spent.
Well, and basically in the course of unwinding it, you have now wasted the time that you spent, because you're not letting yourself go with your decision and let it go out of the house. So I would take things off to be donated faster in smaller batches so that you can not take it back later. And then the other person was talking about having trouble negotiating with themselves. So you're good on you that you're listening to a podcast, and part of that conversation and argument you're having with yourself, you're seeking support and information to better answer those questions. So good for you. Keep coming back. And in the meantime, if you're struggling to have those conversations with yourself and getting hung up, I think it's a perfect time to interact, to have a conversation with someone else, to take those conversations, call a friend, call a relative, talk about them a little bit and, you know, see if having an objective third party conversation makes it easier for you to get past your own stuckness about it, your own conflict about it.
Yeah.
Internal conflict.
All right. Let's go on to our next question.
Okay.
Which was, if you were to wish for one change of behavior in your household with respect to clutter, what would you wish for? And this is Lori's answer is on the changes I need in myself vein. She says, I wish to schedule and honor cleanup and decluttering time more regularly.
Which is a great goal, truly. Just putting some time in regularly on cleanup and decluttering makes a big difference in how you feel about the space you live in. Doing this on some kind of regular schedule is a big change for most people, but it's an important one that has big benefits for everybody. Negotiating that change for all the members of the household, doing it as a team, will mean that all in the house are working towards the same goal. Maybe you can start scheduling for yourself and your partner, assuming that there may or may not be kids in the house. Scheduling kids and scheduling yourself are two different things. Clearly, they have a whole bunch of other stuff going on, but just scheduling something for yourself or yourself and your partner and getting you guys working towards that goal allows there to be a change in the family just by having the two of you do it. And you can loop the kids into it later if you need to.
Lori hasn't mentioned in a response whether there are any kids, but she does say the rest of their family. She's on in answer to the first question. She said, my husband and I have different drop zones that we manage. He's tidier than the rest of the family in our shared spaces and kind when it comes to helping clean up.
Oh, so, that's lovely.
Yeah. She considers herself her worst enemy.
Oh, well, and if your husband is good at it, then maybe you let him be the person that drives the scheduling around it and is sort of the captain of the team, right? Like it's not stressful for him, and he's better at it. And so make use of his skill there and, you know, let him set the goals for the team, set the schedule for the team. And, you know, you guys just agree to work towards the goals that he's setting.
And he can be an accountability partner. For you.
Yeah. Exactly. 100%.
Marina said to have more her change of behavior is to have more frequent declutter sessions and to have someone sit with me sometimes just to get started. I'm dealing with physical and emotional limitations that can really move forward whenever I have a little help.
100%. And, you know, this is why clients hire me, right? Because they're stuck and they can't do it without an accountability partner, without somebody to help them physically, without somebody to help them get past the emotional decision-making where they're getting hung up. Having somebody in on the process with you can make a big difference in whether you're making forward motion or not. So that's a good goal, and aiming for adding in somebody to come and sit with you, even if they're doing it virtually, like even if you get a friend on the phone or FaceTime or Zoom and have that person be talking with you or sitting with you while you work on stuff. So you can ask questions and tell stories and, you know, share when you're struggling and let them help you talk through it. I think that having a person do it with you, however you can make that happen, is always helpful and always helps you get movement going. And the only time that it doesn't work is when you pick somebody who isn't kind or is super judgmental with you out loud about what you're doing. And then it becomes a disincentive. So you definitely want somebody who is supportive, that feels supportive to you, but can be there and help you do the work. And, you know, you can make it better for everybody by you don't book 4 hours with them. If they don't have that kind of time, you work for an hour with somebody. And the truth is, working for an hour with somebody is probably more than you're going to get done sitting home alone by yourself, not getting any support. So schedule smaller sessions and come back to them more frequently, and getting that person to participate, it'll be helpful.
Naomi says in the chat, what I would wish for, that the house cleaning fairy would visit more frequently. more regularly. Sorry.
Right. Yes. I pay for the house cleaning fairy to come because I cannot be, you know, I cannot be keeping up with that very well. So yeah, I appreciate that someone comes behind me and does the major cleaning and super, super helpful about that.
Before we get too far away from it, I wanted to share a comment from Stephanie, who's with us on Facebook, in response to the selling stuff question or answer. She says, sometimes the cost you get for peace of mind is just to just get it done is worth more. I would pay for a cleaner house. I would pay more for a cleaner house than how much it would make if I sold it.
Right. There, you know, you are doing the clutter work because the clutter is interfering with your life, and getting it out is the benefit of improving how you feel in your space. And so it's not money, but it is certainly a valuable benefit and reward for the work that you're doing. And so good point.
Okay. We have one more question we asked, which was,
okay,
describe an item about which you have a strong disagreement over whether or not it deserves a place in your home. Leela said, I don't believe we need my husband's helmet from the Army Reserves 30 years ago, or such a large box of the newspaper articles he wrote 20 years ago. He's the journalist. I think a photo of the helmet and a few special clippings of the newspaper articles would be sufficient.
Oh, Leela. So I imagine that the helmet from him being in the reserves and the articles from him being a journalist are a reflection of his life's accomplishments. These are the things that he participated in that he's proud of, that he feels good about himself over. And that's probably what's, because it's part of his identity, right? That's probably why it's a struggle for him to let it go. I would not try to have those conversations. I would have the helmet conversation and the newspaper conversation separately. And
one challenge at a time.
Yeah, right. And the arguments about them are different. The husband's helmet, it's weird, it's awkward, it can be stored in a closet, and it is definitely, you know, he's not ever going to wear that helmet from the Army Reserve anymore. So maybe it's better that you have a picture of him in it. So maybe you find the picture of him in the helmet and say, look, honey, we have a picture of you wearing the helmet back in the day. And here you can put it on now, and I'll take a new picture of you in the helmet. And in the meantime, we can let the helmet go. He may not be willing to let that go. I mean, he was in the Army. It was an important, it was his whole identity for that time. So
yeah.
That's a hard one. And I get the idea that the picture would probably work. And if you could show him a picture of him when he was wearing it back in the day, and then also take a picture of him now, that might be enough. It at least shows that you're honoring that this was part of his life experience. It was valuable. And maybe then you can talk about releasing the helmet. But if he feels super strongly about it, that it's really, it means something important to him, then we just have to negotiate about where it needs to be.
Right.
Does it need to be put away? Yeah. Like, does it have to be on display? Can I put it in a box and put it in the closet? Do you have to know that you have to see it, or is it sufficient to just know that it's there?
And make a plan for where it goes when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there someone special he'd like to leave it to?
That he wants to go, have it be passed to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the newspaper articles, I guess the question is, depending on what newspaper he wrote for, you may be able to go and show him that those articles have been digitized on the newspaper's website.
There are not that many.
They don't backfill.
You know, newspapers, dailies at least, don't tend to have archives that go back much beyond the, you know, the beginnings of the internet. And sometimes not even then. You know, I've had the problem that, you know, times when you were mentioned in Houston papers, or For that matter, Houston TV set, stations, those segments are long gone, even though it was only a few years ago. They don't keep that much archival stuff. So I think digitizing it yourself is
yeah, that's the next solution, right? Like you take out a portion of the, she says it's a large box. So if you take out a handful every day and open them, and lots of people save the whole newspaper for the one article. And so you can clip out the one article and get rid of a big volume of paper if that hasn't been done already. And then if it has, and this is all just articles that he wrote, then pulling them out, laying them out, and taking photographs of the articles, it might allow you to let go of the physical paper, which is, you know, clearly just deteriorating at this point. But if you had them photographed so that he could see them and look at them anytime he wants, then might be sufficient.
Yeah.
Right. It's likely that once you open that large box of newspaper articles, it's not probably 100% articles he's written. It might be a lot of stuff that he's written and some other stuff too. So if you can just go through it and make sure that anything that isn't an article that he wrote can be removed, that will thin the contents of the box already. And then you can have a conversation about the best way to save the articles, because they're clearly just getting older and deteriorating in place. That paper is trying to disintegrate even as we speak. So making a digital photograph of it is a good point. And recycle.
We had more survey answers prepared to talk about than we have time to talk about. So I will just direct people to the survey results page on the website, which you can find at cfhou.com/results174. Lots and lots of good answers. I think people were really charged up about having a survey to answer again. So we got lots of really good and thoughtful answers. But we have to talk about next week. This topic was suggested by M, who is with us here in Zoom today. Do you find that decluttered spaces tend to collect even more clutter after you organize them than they had before? It can be challenging to shift your thinking and habits to maintain clear space. In our next episode, we're going to examine the ingrained behaviors of clutter recidivists, in air quotes, and suggest strategies for breaking patterns and avoiding mental ruts that lead back to clutter. Join us on next week, July 25th, 2023, at noon U.S. Central Time, for Clutter and Recidivism, How to Avoid Restuffing Unstuffed Areas.
We are going to talk about living with the space, with the air in it, instead of filling it back up. So thanks for the suggestion of the topic, and we'll get to it next week.
Why don't you give us the title?
Okay, so the title is titled Many Hands Make Light Work. This week's assignment is to engage another member of your family or household in an organizing task or project. As you discuss the task or area in question, set aside your judgment, any blame, any history that you may have with a project. Focus instead on things on which you can agree and on constructive ways to move forward, such as improving your communication about stuff, how to use your home, and your shared roles in caring for this particular space. Learning more about and accommodating one another's different organizing styles, tastes, and habits. Clearly communicating your needs and desires related to clutter and organizing to the family member or housemate in question. And that isn't yelling at them to clean up the mess. That's not clearly communicating. Negotiating specific solutions to address the most troubling areas, the things that bother each of you the most. My example of that is the engineer husband who hated when he came home and the dining chairs were not lined up under the table. The dining chairs were out and away from the table, and that made him insane. And it was the easiest things to fix. It was so easy to fix that. All you have to do is walk over before he comes home and put the chairs all back under the table. And then he's super happy, didn't care about any of the other mess in the house, and you got off scot-free. So Negotiating specific solutions for the things that bother you the most, addressing those things first will be a great way to improve your communication and share work on the project. So go negotiate a little bit and come back and tell us about it next week.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please send your questions, comments, and topic suggestions in YouTube comments, on Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. We appreciate you so much, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.